Hey, this is Len Kabasinski, and you're listening to The Cinema Psycho Show.
Oh, goody, goody, here it comes.
Welcome to The Cinema Psycho Show.
You are interested in the unknown, the mysterious, the unexplainable. That is why you are here.
Oh, my God, don't stop now!
With your hosts, Ryan, John, and Elaine.
Welcome to the Cinema Psycho Show, the madhouse for film freaks and film fans of all types. I'm your host, Brian Coddington, joined my fellow co-hosts and filmmakers, John Lane Woolscroft.
Gotta wipe off that dust here for the new year. You know, second week here for us, all the way back. How you guys feeling?
You know, yeah. Still confused, full of Triscuits. That's usually just like my mainstay from the holiday. The new year,
Triscuits.
I know... Yeah, that's like my holiday go-to, you know?
Red meat and beer.
Some people are like, oh, you know, I eat cheese over the holidays. Like, fucking Triscuits, man. That's what I'm all about.
And I got to ask, with your Triscuits, do you go plain or do you put stuff on them?
Oh, I put stuff on them. But, you know, I'm very adamant about the reduced fat. I think the regular are too greasy.
Really?
Not that I'm like a big, like, let's do the low-fat thing over the holidays. But I think that the regular ones are just, they're too much.
That's a Herculean task to do low fat during the holidays.
It's true, but I think it's just because it's better, and then you can put more port wine cheddar on them if they're not as greasy.
I would like to thank our new sponsor, Triscuits.
Dude, I would be so excited. I'd be so Triscuits. Excited. I would sell out more for less, all right?
But yeah, guys, we have an interview here.
We do.
You know, as always, before we start the interview...
With all three of us this time around.
I think we should... I need to do my two-hour dissertation on the war in the Balkans before we... No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, my God.
We're just going to dive right into
the
this.
The worst.
But, Brian, what episode are we on here?
We're episode 125, because Miami Connection counted as an episode. Which, by the way, we haven't really...
It, people.
We haven't really talked. Before we get to our interview, we have not really talked about the amazing... turnout we had at Roadhouse.
Listen, that was fun, you guys. That was amazing. Yeah. Everybody was really in the spirit of like riffing on a terrible movie. It seemed like people had a really good time. I had a great time.
Oh,
that
yeah.
was so
yeah.
fun.
Yeah, they do Video Valley once a month. It's a Friday around like 10 or 10:30, depending. Like, check out the Facebook page.
And they're real good about updating the events on Facebook.
It's a really great time. And I just saw Total Recall there. And that was
That was really fun. So as always, you know, big thanks to our friends at Row House Cinema for showing us a great time, for hosting us and letting us do our mini-sode
on
Miami Connection.
It
was so good.
It was a load of fun. But speaking of bad cinema or... "Quote unquote strange
cinema, if you will, in
cinema.
Stereo."
Our featured interview for this episode is another author of basically a book that tries to document these really obscure movies.
Yeah, which is so interesting.
Because John, you had Adam Rockoff on, who basically took the slasher genre,
yes,
right,
and saw that there was a niche that wasn't being really. Looked at in terms of, you know, documenting these movies.
Mm-hmm.
And our interview with Mike Vaughn is also doing the same thing, only with the strange cinema that exists out there. Really oddball type movies.
Which is really cool because this encompasses every genre. This isn't just like weird horror movies. This is weird everything. And I like me some weird. So
Mike, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Oh, thanks for coming on. Just as we were saying, I mean, you and Adam Rockoff, to mention another person, basically trying to fill the niche of really showcasing these really obscure movies that maybe people just don't seem to either get or really can't find access to because of streaming services like Netflix and Amazon and Hulu and all that.
Yeah, well, it's funny. When I wrote it, there was some movies I was having a really hard time finding. And now, you know, with all these great labels that are putting stuff out, like, for example, I did Liquid Sky, which I had the hardest time finding a copy of. And now, who put that out? Was it Vinegar Syndrome, I think, put out like a beautiful like 2K restoration. You know, I had to watch like a, you know, basically any copy I could get. which wasn't very good. But so a lot of people, when they talk about the book, they say, you know, I want to find all these right away. And I'm like, you know, some of them are actually really easily available now. Some of them, like I was saying, was not when I was researching and putting the book together. But yeah, I mean, it's pretty incredible. All the stuff that's getting released. So,
oh, go ahead.
Oh no, I was just going to say, I really feel like a lot, even the more obscure stuff that I put in the book, you know, give it a couple years and, you know, somebody will put it out on a, like a beautiful Blu-ray of it.
That's awesome. Now, can you take things back a little bit for us? You know, there's so much to unpack here, obviously the subject matter of the, you know, the strange cinema that you discovered, but could you tell us a little bit about, you know, yourself and how you ended up, you know, doing publishing a book and being an author? I think that process is very fascinating as well.
Well, you know, obviously I've been a lifelong film fan and I always have been interested in writing, and I've always kind of wanted to parlay that into like a career. But it wasn't until I started blogging and, you know, reaching out to film people and actually finding that I could kind of parlay this into something more than just, you know, an interest or a hobby. And, you know, anytime like writers ask me like, oh, you know, I'm just starting out, what do you think I should do? And, you know, it sounds really corny, but I tell them to blog, get a free blog, just do it every day. You know, even if it's like a, you know, 100-word review, just do something every day. And, you know, a blog is a perfect excuse to like contact, like industry people and bug them for information or an interview. And I, you know, I found a lot of times 99% of everybody is amazingly awesome to help, you know, young writers out by giving them like an interview or just advice or, so yeah, I what kind of inspired me was a friend of mine had written a book basically of like films to watch around Halloween time. And I thought that was such a cool, like weird little, you know, niche kind of thing. So I was like, you know, I bet I could do this. So I contacted that publisher, Schiffer, who mm-hmm. did his book. And, you know, I submitted a formal proposal, and just amazingly they got back to me and said they were interested, and I signed a contract and I was off and running. It was pretty awesome.
That's great. Now, what did you find as, you know, you had recommended, you know, people just blog and that sounds like that's kind of how you got started. Was the process different for trying to put together something for print than you would actually put, you know, just on the internet?
Yeah. Well, even before blogging, like I tried to kind of build a resume. So I was used to writing something very, you know, polished and print ready versus when I was blogging, it was not as like, I tried to make it like high standard, but like I just kind of threw it together. So, you know, I understood that, you know, this had to be as perfect as I could get it to be. So, when I was writing, I tried to kind of have it to the caliber, like when I used to write for like Films and Review or like a big website like that.
Okay.
So, you know, I tried to, make it as professional as possible. But when I write, I try to write like a very, informative but casual, type of style.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
Like I like to make it entertaining and fun and not feel like I'm talking down to people. Because, you know, like in this book, I talk about stuff like, you know, I talk about low grade stuff like, you know, Devil Fetus. And then I'll talk about like a Jean-Luc Godard movie.
Sure.
Well, it kind of runs the weird spectrum. So
on that note, like, so what qualifies for strange cinema for you, for the, like the book in general, like how do you define that?
Just anything that is just really bizarre, just things that like you feel like you've been secretly dosed while you're watching. Like if you feel like you're on an acid trip and you didn't take anything, then that is most definitely a strange movie. But, you know, I try to do like more underground or less mainstream stuff. There's a few bigger budget movies in the book, but I really try to stay away from those. And, you know, I try to stay away from stuff that just people probably read reviews about for like the 100th millionth time. Like I easily could have put like Reanimator in there, for example, but
yeah,
you know, I love it. You know, it's a great movie. It's a strange movie, but you know, when I was curating this list of movies that I wanted to talk about, you know, I wanted to talk about stuff that, not a lot of people were talking about or reading about. So just to make it more interesting or entertaining to hardcore film fans or people just starting out and wanting to know, you know, where to go as far as something weird or interesting to watch.
Now, how much of this book did you know coming into it, and how much did you just kind of discover on research?
Yeah, were there any surprises when you were writing it?
Oh yeah. Let's see. I when I started thinking about doing the book, I made a list of stuff that I knew were really weird and stuff I really liked. You know, I had my standbys, but of course, you know, a lot of it was research and a lot of it was discovering these wonderful, weird, little grimy gems. like there's this really kind of weird, awesome giallo called The House with Yellow Carpet. Are you, any of you guys familiar with this?
I'm familiar with the giallo films, like it's Dario Argento stuff, but no,
house,
I'm not familiar
the House
with
of
that
Yellow
one.
Carpet. That just sounds like you have a lot of elderly people or small animals.
Yeah, it has such a weird title, but it's actually kind of a great little giallo film. And, you know, it was one of those movies that it just completely surprised me because, you know, I never heard of it. You know, I just stumbled on it by pure accident. Like another one was Battle Wizard, which was kind of an amazing find during my research. The only time that there was an assassin gorilla in a movie, I feel like that's not utilized as much as it should be.
No, we need more movies with assassin gorillas in them.
Just killer monkeys in general. Like Shakma.
I'm in.
It was funny, a note about that, my editor came back to me with some notes, and he was like, do you mean like they were like guerrilla warfare, gorilla that? And I was like, no, it's an actual gorilla animal, primate.
Now, was there anything you found after the book was written where you were like, damn it, that should be in the book?
Yeah, and I knew that was going to happen. I talked to another friend that did a film guide and he said, just make peace with that because, you know, in my contract, if they want an updated edition, I have to have like X amount of material on hand.
Oh, okay.
But, it's not official, but I really want to do a volume 2, because, you know, again, like I said, I knew that there was going to be a bunch of stuff that I found after the fact, or there was things that I was trying to locate prints of, and I just couldn't, either because it was just unavailable, completely unavailable, or no subtitles, or gotcha. Sometimes I found a movie that I wanted to put in there so badly, but you know, it was like $40-$50 for like a copy.
Right.
So
makes sense.
How was that search? Like in terms of, you know, did you have to find old VHSs? Did you have to find film prints and run them on a projector? Like how is it trying to find some of these more obscure movies?
I actually was really lucky for the most part. I found some movie dealers. Like there was one based in New York that had some really weird, obscure stuff. And I would just basically buy like VHSs or most of the time it was like DVDs. And again, I feel like in a few years, all of this stuff is going to be readily available. But yeah, it was a lot of work, but then again, I think it makes a better book because, you know, I'm coming up with titles that not everybody has heard of, like, not to sound douchey and name drop, but I'm friends with Frank Hedenlotter, who was awesome enough to, he got a copy of the book and he took a picture of himself with the book, which was the most amazing thing ever. But, you know, even he was like, you know, I've never heard of like such and such title or, you know, like in your book or something. I was like, that's, you know, in hindsight, that's really awesome because, you know, this is somebody that's seen like basically every movie on the planet. I mean, like I got like an amazing privilege to actually see his movie collection in person.
Wow.
And it's pretty amazing. I mean, it's mind boggling. Like you see it in interviews when he does any kind of interview, they like shoot it behind the, you know, literal wall of movies. But I mean, seeing it's just kind of a whole other thing. But you know, that's, I thought, you know, going that extra mile, it's just going to make it a better read. Like I want, like as corny as it sounds, like I wanted to make something that I would get excited about reading.
Now I had a question. Now the movies that you're including in this book, are they all older films or like some of them newer ones by newer independent filmmakers?
It runs the entire spectrum. Like I have a silent film in there all the way up to like a few years ago. And I try to include like some films from like some of my friends that do kind of like small indie movies, like my friend did this movie called Bloody Bloody Bible Camp.
I've seen that movie. seen that movie. I saw that movie.
That sounds fantastic.
A couple years. It is fantastic. I saw that movie a couple years ago at a horror film convention in Pittsburgh called Horror Realm.
Nice.
And it was great.
I became really good friends with the filmmaker and like, I've been like fan of that movie for like, since like day one. Like,
yeah.
I've drunk the Kool-Aid. I'm like, I'm hooked. You know? So, you know, I wanted to showcase that. I wanted to showcase some other like stuff that some friends have made. Like, Blown, have you seen that one?
No,
the killer blow up doll.
Really?
it's just as bad as it sounds, but it's kind of,
I don't know, it sounds amazing.
I mean, I think that would be like the easiest killer to stop, like you just pop him.
Yeah.
Like he's worse than Chucky you kick, but I mean with the blow up doll you just pop him.
Before she pops you.
Before she pops you.
Well,
anyway. Oh, that should have been the tagline.
Pop her before she pops you.
But you know, my friend David is in that, and I have this great still that I used in the book of him having this passionate shower scene with the blow up doll.
Oh God.
Oh my.
So I of course had to like screen cap that and put it in the book.
Oh, of course. That's a good friend right there.
I support it.
But yeah, I mean, you know, and that's what's fun about this book is like I try to, you know, highlight stuff that, you know, is like a little more well known versus like some newer stuff that is not as well known, just because one, I have a genuine passion about like helping independent guys out.
Right.
And you know, they just happen to also be pretty awesome movies. So, yeah, it's, it was a pleasure putting, some of these, some newer independent movies into the book, just, you know, I mean, I figure if like, you know, even one extra person discovers that movie because of me, then that's awesome.
Well, that's what I was going to ask next. So we're in the age of people getting most of the discovery of their media through ratings like Rotten Tomatoes, and discovering it because it's, oh, I only watch the movie because it's on Netflix, and I only watch the movie because it's on iTunes. And I feel that a lot of good movies, either awesomely bad movies or just decent movies in general, get kind of lost because they either don't know how to get on Rotten Tomatoes or they don't know how to get onto Netflix or they can't afford it. Do you feel that your book can kind of give voice to some of these films that most people can't find or can't really... watch?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I hope so. It's, I mean, my main inspiration, and I have, this is written in my foreword in the book, is I used to live near like a really great mom and pop rental shop. You know, not Blockbuster, not like the big mega chains. Like, it was just an amazing little rental shop. And I mean, it was just such an amazing way to discover some like stuff that, you know, what was not in the mainstream. And, you know, then I talk about like discovering like Fangoria and Gore Zone and stuff like that. And I mean, this was like my exciting window into like stuff that, you know, that I wouldn't have been exposed to otherwise. Like I can still remember seeing like in Fangoria, like an ad slick for like The Beyond.
Yep.
And it just blowing my mind. So, I mean, it's like, I hope that, you know, my reference guy can be, you know, fun and exciting. Like when I was first starting out, just researching and discovering these movies, you know, whether it be just at my local rental place or like a fanzine or, you know, a little later on like the internet. And what's kind of cool is I was worried in a little way that maybe reference guides aren't in vogue anymore, but it's doing all right. And I've had a lot of people say like, you know, you did a reference guide and I love that. I love these things. I've gotten that quite a few times and it's really awesome that, you know, there definitely is still a market and a place for,
it's a beautifully designed book. I mean, I looked at some of the interiors of the book on Amazon and through your publisher, and it's beautifully designed. So, I mean, that right there, you know, unfortunately, we live in a world where things have to be pretty for people to, you know, to want to read it.
Yeah.
And I mean, it absolutely... you know, is a beautifully made book. The cover is great too. So, I mean, I think there is definitely some credence to, you know, having film guides just because of the fact that, you know, we don't have video stores anymore. That's, you can just go through the halls of and find movies.
Yeah. Brian, hold on 1 second here. There's a waterfall or something.
There's a waterfall or something.
But Brian, yeah, to piggyback on what you had to say, you know, I just want to ask you, like, you know, not to sound like an old man yelling at clouds here, but I mean, how important do you think it was to grow up with the video store? Because, like, you know, I look at something like Netflix, and years ago when I got that, like something like Troll 2 would come up and they want me to rate it. And I was like, why is there not an option to ironically rate something? You know what I mean? Like, and I'd have to try to give it like 4 stars or 0 stars, and I don't know what to do. And, you know, and those algorithms are what they are, but they're not going to really give you a gem, you know. But when you go through the store and you look at those box arts, you might, you know, see something and say, oh, I have to see this, you know, because you have to walk through the whole store to try to really find something. Like, do you think that we've really lost something by not having a tangible place to go and actually rent movies any longer?
I think so. I just, speaking from my own kind of, viewpoint, it was such a cool, awesome experience to like pick, I mean, you know, to go to a video store and see all the amazing, lurid, you know, weird covers and pick something that looks awesome and amazing. You take it home and, you know, it's going to be shit probably. But
nine times out of 10, it was.
But that's,
you know, yeah, I mean, because everybody knows usually if they're doing their job correctly, if it's a bad movie, it's going to have an amazing cover. That's video logic 101 there.
And most of the stuff on the cover is not going to be in the movie.
Oh, exactly. There's been many instances where I'm like, oh, that's some fantastic cover art, but oh, boy, that movie is not that good. But yeah, it's, I think you lose some of the fun. I mean, I always had a great time picking out a movie. I had a friend that was also really into like, horror and stuff. And, you know, we would have like weekends where we would get like five or six tapes and just while out on a weekend and watch four or five movies in a evening or something. I mean, I guess like what's kind of cool about, I mean, I don't completely hate streaming because I mean, I do love the convenience, but then I also kind of miss the, I don't know, like actually physically getting a movie. But you know, it's interesting. Do you guys do Prime, stream Prime?
Yeah, I have Prime.
Well, I mean, some of the titles they get kind of amaze me because they're all very, I mean, like some of them are very like bargain basement VHS level stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I'm like streaming through, like looking at the covers, you know, what to stream. And I'm like, this is almost weirdly kind of like a virtual video store where I can just, you know, watch like 20 titles at a time if I want. Something like that would be kind of amazing. I mean, it's not going to be the same. And I'm somebody that like, I want to try to keep up with times and not just pine away for the golden years or whatever. But, I can see a place for kind of both of those things. And I think this is a time that, is kind of most amazing for like film fans, of like kind of the movies that we like, because like I was talking about earlier, Everything Under the Sun is getting like re-released like in 2K and 4K. And it's kind of an amazing time to be alive as far as like all these kind of, lost or nearly lost movies kind of getting a new life, from all these companies.
I mean, it's a great point you make because I mean, we did a live show, last month and it was with a release of Miami Connection, which had been released, which previously was lost and, was released as a 2K transfer. So just as you said, I mean, people are discovering these movies and I do think that, you know, I think more and more people want variety, in the media that they're going to watch. For every person, it's just like, well, if Rotten Tomatoes doesn't give it a good grade, I'm not going to watch it. There's a lot of people who will say, you know what, I'll take a chance on it. But I just think availability is the biggest hurdle. You know, filmmakers don't have, especially independent filmmakers, don't have a whole lot of money. And unfortunately, they're still kind of gatekeepers when it comes to streaming. I mean, aside from Amazon, you know, Netflix, you have to pay to be on there or they have to buy you outright. But to get to that, you have to go through the gatekeepers for that part, sort of stuff.
Yeah. And that's unfortunate. And, I mean, I think with social media, though, I think that a lot of independent new filmmakers, that, you know, even though they can't necessarily get their movies out like streaming, but you know, I know a lot of really good indie directors that are kind of making a really good career just based on finding a following. Like I was talking to you. Are you guys familiar with Tim Ritter, his movies?
I'm not.
No, no, me neither. Not.
Okay. I was going to say, stop what you're doing immediately. you definitely look up Tim Ritter. I think I put like three of his movies in my book. I only limited myself to like three per filmmaker, but I probably could have written an entire guide about Tim Ritter's movies because they're so amazing and weird and wonderful.
Oh, Killing Spree. Okay, I like this already.
Yeah, Killing Spree's great. There is a scene where the killer, the titular killer, is casually vacuuming in Speedos.
Awesome.
Why?
I'm
You know, because that's a thing.
Well, it would be casual if you're in a Speedo. I mean, you got all that freedom of movement, you know.
but my his opus, as far as I'm concerned, is a movie called Creep, made in the 90s, and I'm not going to spoil it. It is actually available on Blu-ray, which I really want to get. Well, Tim and I became friends, and he actually sent me a couple harder to find movies so I could put in the book. But, you know, we were talking about like when he was starting out making movies, like he had to grassroot pedal his, right, his movies, like, you know, take out ads out in fanzines, just anything that he could. I mean, pre-internet. And, you know, I was like, do you feel like younger filmmakers have it easier with social media? And, you know, like on Twitter, you know, I can reach like 100,000 people in like a weekend. I mean, you know, just as an example. And, you know, he just said that it kind of just blows his mind that, you know, how young filmmakers can do it this day, because I mean, he really, like, I have a hell of a respect for Tim because he, you know, really like made himself, and his reputation all on his own. I mean, he was like his first movie, he made like when he was like in high school. Mm-hmm. And he actually got it distributed in video stores. It was like, I think it was like the very first independent movie that a VHS label bought.
Wow.
And distributed. And I mean, he was still in high school. Like, I was doing nothing in high school, as we all were, you know. Yeah. I mean, this is just incredible. But, you know, nowadays it's a lot easier because you don't have to kind of do all the grunt work. I mean, I'm not saying that it's easy for an independent filmmaker by no means, you know, but marketing is definitely a lot easier. I mean, like he literally took videos to like mom and pop places to drum up interest, just to get his, you know, he had to take out ads and stuff just to get his movies kind of, you know, I mean, he started to get a reputation and a following and stuff, but like, you know, again, it's well before the internet, well before like Facebook or Twitter or anything like that.
Yeah, I definitely see the point there. I mean, you know, back in the day, like literally, you couldn't be everywhere because, you know, money and just opportunities didn't exist really. I think the only caveat with social media is just that it's a pay-per-play system right now. You know, it used to be that, you know, you could use Facebook and it would go everywhere, but if you don't pay for that ad, well, then it's not going to go anywhere, everywhere.
Yeah.
And, you know, I also think the other thing, too, is that, and we've made this comment on our show a couple times, that technology has made it so that it's easier now to make a movie than ever before. But that now means that everyone thinks they can make movies. And and everyone thinks that, oh, I could just use my phone and make a movie. And you can, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's good. And you kind of can get lost in the shuffle of everybody when everybody is trying to push their movie and everyone's trying to push their thing. And it's hard to kind of get those good movies. Like I was I forget what documentary I was watching in which Kevin Smith said there'd be no way that, you know, if he tried to submit Clerks to Sundance Now that he would get picked. He's like, there's no way. Because at the time, you know, his movie was very obscure. It was very independent. And it, you know, it wasn't like anything else that had been seen before. So, you know, and there people weren't just submitting movies left and right. I think it was the Rejected movie, the documentary. You remember that one?
Yep.
Official Rejection, I think that was it, where they talked about the film festival circuit and how it's kind of skewed towards Hollywood. But I do see that danger with social media. It's just that it is harder for filmmakers to really pop through some of the noise.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, and one that I don't think I really considered. But yeah, I mean,
that's not to say that it's impossible. It's just I think the one. I think in every age you have challenges. I think that's the challenge now, is that everybody thinks they can be filmmakers and everybody thinks they can get through it, and it's a lot of noise.
Yeah, and I mean, when I was actively blogging, I would get a lot of, you know, young filmmakers that were like, oh, can you please, you know, review my movie? And I mean, I always hate doing that because, like, you want to be honest, and you also want to not hurt their feelings.
Right.
And I always used to say, like, okay, I will, because I'm a nice guy, but just know that I'm going to be honest. And if I don't like it, I'm not going to be brutal, but I'm going to be honest. And everyone always tells me, oh, yeah, I can take it.
No, they can't.
And then they can't. You guys watch Rick and Morty, right?
Absolutely.
So there's this one brilliant episode where I think it's the Purge episode.
Yeah.
Where, like, the guy wants writing advice. And he's like, oh, you know, I can take criticism. I'm honest. I'm fine, you know. And when Morty gives him that feedback, he kind of goes ballistic. you know, that's actually pretty accurate. But, I mean, back kind of more to your point, though, I feel like the flip side of that is I hope that if it's a genuinely good movie that – you know, people will recognize it from the herd of kind of mediocre stuff.
Right.
But to your point, you know, will it get lost in the shuffle before it even gets discovered? I mean, so there's kind of a flip side to that, but that's an interesting point.
By the way, I just Googled Creep, and the box art is amazing. I'm starting to think he's not attacking her, but just kind of trying to help her with her back pain. yeah. She's a very buxom woman.
That's fair.
How many times did you run into that kind of rare, obscure thing that you kind of saw in the 90s of movies that were shot on VHS that actually got distribution?
Not a whole lot. Like, I love like shot on video 90s stuff.
Yeah.
Like, that's my absolute like go to. Like, usually they're not very good, but I mean, they always have that really wonderfully crappy, you know, shot on a handheld video thing. I remember one I did that I didn't really particularly like, but I kind of like, it's kind of a so bad it's good, called Gut Pile.
Pile or pile?
Again, it's really kind of obscure. the guy that directed it actually ended up creating a video label that's pretty successful. He did that that movie House Shark. I think
I'm not familiar with that.
Let me check this. Well, coincidentally, I think he also puts out Ritter stuff.
Okay.
That label, I don't recall it off the top of my head, but it was funny because I was talking to him like post book, and because he found out that Gut Pyle was in the book, and he's like, "Oh, what'd you think?" And I was like, "Oh, it was, you know, there was things I liked about it." It was kind of awkward because I didn't completely trash it, but then I also kind of picked its carcass,
right?
Because it wasn't very good. But yeah, I mean, I love all that shot on video 90s stuff. That's
was it Ron Bonk, the director of
yes. Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you, Google.
Awesome. Well, Mike, where can people get a copy of Strange Cinema?
Well, Amazon is temporarily out of stock, so I'm hoping that that'll be...
come on, Bezos.
Yeah, so hopefully there'll be more copies on the way. Right now, I have a very limited number of my own books from... I did a convention, and I had, of course, I had books left. you know, I've sold quite a few since the convention, but I still have like a few more that, I'm going to be signing and selling. So, the best way to get a hold of me is on Twitter. I'm at StrangeCinema65. Just hit me up there, DM me, you know, give me a follow. I'm selling books there. Just, you know, like a final word. You know, not only does it have a lot of great reviews, but I have a lot of really interesting interviews.
I noticed the one with Joe Flood in the preview of the book.
Yeah. Oh, that was awesome. So Student Bodies is kind of my favorite movie of all time.
It's a good one. It's a good one.
Like Fight Me, but it's one of those movies.
I mean,
that,
it's
like,
good.
I mean, it all seriousness, no, it is one of those movies that, like, if I'm having a bad day, it's kind of the greatest pick me up movie. Like, I've shown it to everybody and nobody's disliked it. I mean, everyone's just like laughed or got all the jokes, but anyways, I wanted so badly to get anybody from that movie to talk to me, and I just happened to be able to get Joe Flood, who plays the shop teacher,
yep,
like one of the, like, arguably one of the most memorable characters, and you know, that was
him
awesome.
And the janitor are the best characters in that movie.
Yes, yeah. You know, and they got all the best lines. I mean, like, I find myself quoting that movie very often, way more than I probably should. But, like, I got Larry Cohen.
Oh, to talk wow, to me, yeah.
Which was amazing. So I do full interviews, but then there's sometimes when, I will just get, like, an amazing quote or anecdote. To accompany that review. So he didn't really give me a full interview. But what I really wanted was just like, a great anecdote from like the movies that I reviewed. So like in Q, he gives this amazing, story about filming in the Chrysler Tower.
Oh yeah.
He talks about some really interesting stuff, on the stuff. But you know, I'm kind of most proud of like my really weird, obscure interviews. Like there was this movie, it's really horrible. It's called, Attack of the Beast Creatures.
Oh, Jesus.
you might have seen a still from this, these like puppet things look like, remember like the Zuni fetish doll? From Trilogy of Terror?
Yes. Yeah.
So they look like those all like, but really like low rent those. Like if you gave somebody a dime and told you to make something, like these would be the shitty things that they made.
Right.
but anyways, I got a hold of the one actor in that. And he's like, oddly enough, he's a comedian now. And it was such an amazing interview because, you know, it's one of these weird, obscure movies, but it kind of has a cult following. And it was just kind of amazing to talk to somebody that, like, actually was there. And he gave me a slew of, like, great little anecdotes about making this really weird movie that, like, only a handful of people have heard of. And I'm kind of proud of those. I mean, don't get me wrong, it was amazing that I got Larry to talk to me. It was amazing that you know, there was like, I don't want to spoil all of them, but you know, like I had interviewed Frank a couple times and I wanted to get a fresh interview, but he was I think he was making a movie at the time, so he gave me permission to use like a past interview I did. Right. So he's in the book talking about Basket Case 2. And just, you know, it was awesome. So like it's not just me and my reviews and stuff. I kind of wanted to take that extra step and get these really fun and interesting.
Awesome.
Yeah. Interviews.
Now we're
to just kind of set it apart. So yeah.
So yeah, obviously we're wrapping up here. Yeah, sorry about that. I know we're wrapping things up here a little bit, but how often just did you run into situations where when you did the interviews that people were either super proud of it, were very aware of what it was, or you know, did you also run into people that were kind of defensive about, you know, the work they had done?
No, I've never talked to anybody that was either like super boastful or super defensive about what they made. I mean, it is what it is. So yeah, everybody was really cool with interviews. I mean, even when I was blogging and doing interviews, I never really got anybody that was like hostile or negative about something I did.
Right.
And, you know, if it was a crappy movie, they usually were in on the joke and was like, yeah, you know, we made crap and people still enjoy it. So that's good.
Awesome. Well, again, where can people get a copy of the book?
So, yeah, it's on Amazon, but it's temporarily out of stock. You can always just, you know, bookmark it and wait till it comes back, or I do have a limited supply of my own books. If you are on Twitter, hit me up at StrangeCinema65. Send me a DM. You know, I think I have about 5 copies left. But awesome. I figure, you know, it's kind of cool that I can maybe like I can also sign these and sell them and everything. So yeah, that's
yeah.
And again, if you can wait, Amazon will have them. Amazon's actually on sale right now, like $23, I think. So, but like I said, if you can't wait and want a signed copy, hit me up on Twitter. You know.
Awesome. Definitely check it out, guys.
It's a hell of a book. I mean.
Oh, thanks. I really appreciate it.
Been a hell of an interview. That's why we've been kind of like quiet. We're like,
We're really into an interview and we don't say that much. It's usually
Sorry. I hope I didn't dominate that.
No, it's great.
That's what we're hoping for always. But yeah.
I just like, this is one of the subjects that like, sometimes I got to shut myself up because I just get so excited and into.
That's what we like. That's what we want.
That's cool. So, Lane, where can they find you at on the Twitter machine?
You can find me at LA_Croft.
John?
The Unreal Jables.
You can find me at Brian Carnton. I also run the Psycho Show page. Be sure to like us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Google+, at Psycho Show. You can also find us on the Epicast Network at epicastnetwork.com. If you have a favorite movie or question you want to throw away, you can contact us at cinemapsychoshow.com. And make sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts and iTunes and catch a new episode available every Sunday.